to Colossians chapter 3. One of the neat things about Paul's writing, of course, inspired by the Holy Spirit, but the way that his writing often works out is that he begins with some abstract ideas, some kind of deep theological truths. And these are sort of deep waters where you can stretch your mind and just chew on it and think about it. A lot of his writing begins that way, and then he transitions into some very practical instructions. Sometimes this pattern plays out over the course of a whole book. Romans, Ephesians, the first bit of it is deep and heady and, you know, abstract, if I can use that word. And then it gets into, like in Ephesians 4, 5, and 6, don't steal. Work hard when you go to work. Raise your kids the right way. And it's sort of like some real practical things. And I think both of these are necessary. The first part in the big idea part is sort of the why. It is the reason that we do what we do. What God is up to. How this fits into the grand scheme of things. And we need that part. And then the second part is the breaks it down into very like instructions, practical. And we need that part. If we just had one or the other, I think we'd be missing something important. If we just had the big idea, but we didn't know how does that apply to what am I supposed to do when I wake up in the morning, or how does that apply to me, that it would, maybe we would learn something from it and we would get something out of it, but we'd be missing something about how it applies to us. And if we only had the, you know, do this and do this and do this, but we never understood why, that, you know, it'd probably leave us wanting something. You know, why is it important that I do these things? What is the meaning behind it? And so I like the fact that he often gives us both sides of that, and I think we need them both. And in Colossians 3, we have this in a couple of paragraphs, both the big idea and then the practical instructions. So that's in our text today. You'll be able to see this same pattern here in the beginning and the beginning, basically half of this chapter. He begins in chapter 3, verse 1, if then you've been raised with Christ. So you can tell already that we're kind of in the middle of a thought. If then you've been raised with Christ, and he goes on. So to back up and kind of pick up this thread that starts in chapter 1, turn back to chapter 1. I just want to highlight a couple of verses as we come through chapters 1 and 2 that bring us up to speed with where we are in the thought. So in chapter 1, he says in verse 13 of chapter 1, he has transferred us from the domain of darkness and has transferred us, he's delivered us from the domain of darkness, has transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. So there was a time when we were in the domain of darkness, but there's been a transition, there's been a transference, a deliverance. And so we'll describe that this way on the screen, that imagine down here was when we were living in darkness, but he has transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved son, out of darkness and into light. Verse 21. You who were once alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, that's down there in the darkness. He has now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death in order to present you holy and blameless above reproach before him. So this is in his body. Here's how we get from one to the other. Down there, we're living in, you know, sin, but he has, in his body of flesh, reconciled us to present us before the Father, holy and blameless. That's this big transition that happens. In chapter 2, he describes this same thing in verse 11 through 13, and we find out when this happens. In him, you also were circumcised with the circumcision made without hands by putting off the body of flesh by the circumcision of Christ. This is the passage from last week. Verse 12, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God, who raised him from the dead, and you who were dead in the trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God has made alive together with him, having forgiven us all our trespasses. So now we can add a couple of things to our slide here. Down there we were dead, up here we are now alive. So you were dead, but God raised you up with Christ and made you alive. Verse 20 of chapter 2. If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why, as if you're still alive in the world, do you submit to regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, referring to things that perish as they are used. So he's saying you used to live down here and there were certain rules and there was all kinds of things that had to do with this life. But you died to that and now you're up here. So why are you still living like you're down there? And he works out some practical applications of this idea, and that flows into our chapter. So we come to chapter 3, and he continues the thought, if then you have been raised with Christ, so see how that fits into his theme, if you truly have been delivered from darkness and transferred to the kingdom of his Son, if you've been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above. This is the point of today's lesson. Seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. I want to just dwell on these first four verses for just a few moments as we think about, this is the sort of the, I don't know if abstract is the right word, but this is the kind of the deep part of this, the why, and then we'll get into the practical part in the next section. So it begins with, if then you have been raised with Christ. I like the way he phrases that. I mean, of course they have been. He's writing to Christians. But the way that it's worded is to remind them of something maybe we tend to forget. If you've been raised with Christ, then this should be true. Because sometimes we forget we've been raised with Christ. Sometimes we still live like we're living in the old life. So we need to be reminded. In chapter 6 of Romans, he does the same thing. He says, you know, do you not remember that all who are baptized into Christ, you died to all that? So how can you still live that way? If you died to that, you've got to be over here now. So there was this huge change in your life, right? That's sort of what he's saying. And if you went through this huge change in your life and you died and now you've been raised, then you should be living this way now and you should stop living that way. And it is interesting that he says, how did this happen? He said, you were raised with Christ. Look back at chapter 2, verse 12. It says, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you also were raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God who raised him from the dead. Think about the empty tomb. What does the empty tomb prove? In order, it proves that God has power over death. So, God can take a person who has died and has been put in the ground. God can bring him back to life. Does God have that power? Yes. How do we know God has that power? Look at the empty tomb. Secondly, it proves that Jesus was the Son of God. Because there were statements made, and statements that Jesus made himself, that predicted this and declared that he would rise from the dead. It was prophesied. And so the empty tomb also proves that this Jesus was who he said he was. But thirdly, it proves something else. And it has to do with me and you. And that's the part that Paul's talking about here. You died with Christ, and you were raised with Christ by faith in the powerful working of God who raised him from the dead. The same power that brought life back to Jesus and brought him back to life after he had been buried, died and buried. That same power, Paul says, is working in you. And when you had faith in him and you believed the gospel, you also died. And when you died and you killed that old man of sin, in a way, and this is the part I'm saying is kind of like you got to chew on it a while. You died with Christ. He says that in Romans 6 also. You were united with him in a death like his. You died with Christ. And not only did you die with Christ, you were raised with him. So as Jesus was raised from the dead, you are raised with him and even in him. And that becomes kind of, you know, challenging to picture in your mind. Look at chapter 3 and verse 3. For you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Just picture that for a moment. Think of the words, what they're trying to tell us. You died. That's a strange statement anyway, just to write to people who are still alive and able to read, right? You died. Well, yes, we died. And your life now, remember Paul said, the life that I live by faith in the Son of God. Your life now is where? hidden, isn't that beautiful, with Christ in God. Where's Jesus? Remember the disciples stood there staring? And the angels came and said, hey, he's coming back, you know. But where did he go? He went to be with the Father. He's seated at the right hand of God, right? So think about what he's saying. If you died with Christ, if you were raised with Christ, where is Christ? In heaven at the Father's side. And he says, your life, you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in the Father. That's amazing. So your life now is there in some way. And that's deep stuff. That's something to really sit and just ponder. And I would encourage you to do so. I hadn't really thought a lot about that picture until reading this text again. And so that's how the Bible is. You know, you're always discovering things that you've been there all this time and you never really stopped to think about it. But I've been sort of pondering that. And it's a lot there to try to imagine exactly what Paul is saying. So, again, verse 1, if then you've been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. So it only makes sense. If we were living here, and he has delivered us from darkness to the kingdom of his Son, if you were dead, and you were raised by God, the same power that was at work in Jesus that brought him back to life, and you were given new life, and if that new life is in Christ, and if Christ is in heaven, then where should your mind and your heart be? Where he is. So, set your mind on things above. Why? Because you were raised with Christ, and that's where he is, and that's where your heart and your mind should be. So let me give you an illustration I think kind of fits with this. Probably several of you have experienced this, we have experienced this, where you're making a move, you're moving to some new town, and because of the sequence of events, sometimes one spouse has to go before the other. When we moved here, it was that way. We were in Waco, and I got the job at Goodman, so I came on up, and I was living at the Best Western, and Sarah had the kids were still, Jack was finishing up kindergarten, and or first grade, I think it was first grade, and so it was in April, and he needed to kind of finish up the year. And so, there were some things to do. The house had to be sold in Texas. All that kind of stuff. And I was up here looking for a house. And so I actually found the house. I think I've told you the story. When the house on 4th Avenue, the realtor showed it to me, he said, now, these houses on the avenues go kind of quick. So if you want to wait, because I was trying to say, I need Sarah needs to come look at it. He said, you can wait if you want, but it probably be gone if you wait very long. And sure enough, I put my offer in. Another one was put in the same day. They were both in her inbox the same day. But I called Sarah and I said, if you want to wait and come look, you can. But there's this house and you can look at it online. But if we like it, we've got to probably put an offer on it now or else it's going to go. And so she said, okay. So we bought that house. She'd never even been to it or seen it. That's pretty cool. So we had Sarah's in Texas. There was a new house we'd already got a signed off deal on. This was going to be the new place we go, but she's there. She's got to like wrap up things and do things. So put yourselves in the position of you know that you're moving and your family has already gone. Let's just imagine. So you imagine, put yourself there. You've got family. They've already gone ahead and you've got a new home and it's going to be good and you're excited about this, right? But there's some delay. You've got to like wrap up things and then you can go. Okay? Can you kind of picture this scenario? So, in the meantime, would you still go buy groceries. You would probably still go to work if you had a job. You'd have to keep doing the things you got to do. You'd still help people. You'd still raise your kids. You still do. But, all along, what are you thinking about? In however many weeks or days, remove it. So, your mind, on your spare time, you'd be like Googling and looking and looking. You would be thinking about. Your heart and mind would already be going somewhere else, right? And you've probably seen people that at work we call them short timers. When somebody already had when they knew they were leaving, whether it be to retire or whether it be because they'd taken a job somewhere else, but they had to finish out their time and they're going to be here for another month and then they're gone. You call them short timers because you know already they're already mentally they're kind of somewhere else, but they're still showing up and doing their job, but they're not going to be here all that long. They've got their mind somewhere else. Isn't that sort of what Paul is saying here? So if with Christ, if you died and you were raised with him and he's there and that's where you're going and that's where you want to be, then set your mind and your heart there, not here. And I think the picture is the same. And that's hard. It's hard for me. It's hard for us, I think. We get so used to here that we almost forget we're moving. We forget that there's someone gone ahead of us, that we have a new house, that it's going to be better, that we have something waiting for. So we forget all about that and we just focus on, you know, doing our stuff here. The danger in forgetting about that is that if my mind gets set on things here, there's a lot of temptations that are going to come with that. There's earthly thinking will keep us from having the right heart and the right attitude and the right mindset about our hope, about what's important, about, you know, the things that really matter, the things that are eternal, because the things here are all temporary. Everything eternal is over there. Everything that we're looking forward to, our inheritance, our home, our Savior, is over there. And so the challenge is set your mind on things above, not on things that are in the earth. You remember what Jesus says? Where is your heart? It's where your treasure is, right? So where's our treasure? If our treasure is here and our heart is here, how excited are we about going there? And you even hear this. There's songs about this. You know, everybody's singing about heaven, but I'm kind of happy here. Or, you know, everybody wants to go to heaven, nobody wants to go now. It's kind of like, I'm loving life here. Yeah, sure, when I die, I'd rather go to a good place than a bad place, but I'm not in any hurry to go because I want to be here, and I'm liking this, and I love this, and if this could last forever, I'd just stay right here. But that's spoken by someone who isn't really thinking about and understanding what's there and what's here. And so Paul says, set your mind on things above. That's where our hearts and minds should be. And then he says in verse 4, when Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. That's the goal. That's the hope, to be with him in glory. So this is the first part of this is sort of like the big idea, the why. But now, how does it work in practical? Okay, how do I put this into use? What do I do with that understanding? The next part is what tells us the kind of the how, the instructions. So if this is all true, verse 5, he says, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. So if you died to this, and you've been raised and seated with Christ in the heavenly places, if you've been raised and your life is with Christ, then you really shouldn't be doing any more of this. Put to death what is earthly in you. And he goes on to list some things. And it reminds me of cancer and people who have cancer that has spread. And when they find out that they have cancer and this cancer has spread, they go and they do a scan of some sort. And what they're hoping to do is find wherever it went. And then, hopefully, you're able to do some sort of treatment. And what do you want that treatment to do? If it works, if it's going to fix the problem, it's got to find a cancer wherever it is, big or small, and kill it all, right? Because if there's some left, it's going to continue to be a threat to your life. But if you can find it wherever it happens to be and get rid of it completely, then you can be in remission. That's the goal if you catch it early enough, of course. And so they do these scans and they look and they're examining and then they check again, usually. And then sometime later they check again. And what are they wanting to see? Has it spread? Has it come back? And I think it's the same idea here that Paul is saying, since you're there and your heart and mind should be there, look inside of you and put to death what is earthly in you. So it's like we do a scan of ourselves and we say, do I have anything in me that's still latched on down here or thinking in worldly sinful ways? And if so, we need to irradiate that like you would some kind of cancerous growth. We need to recognize that this thing, this part of me that's still earthly in thinking and action is a threat to my spiritual life. And I've got to be aggressive in treating that. I've got to get rid of it because it's going to potentially keep me from being able to live where I want to live. And so what kinds of things does he talk about? Well, he lists them. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you? Sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. Here's an example. It's obviously not exhaustive. But some things that are earthly, some things that are that need to be put to death are these kinds of things. These are earthly passions. These are things that bring about the wrath of God. The punishment is coming. These bring about death. This is, as he goes on to say, this is how we used to walk, verse 7, in these two. You once walked when you were living in them. This might come as a surprise. It shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. That as you look around the room, you should probably assume every person here has a time in their life when they were living like this. Sometimes we kind of imagine, especially if you grow up in a place, you sort of imagine all these people like they never did anything wrong. They were all always, you know, doing the right stuff. And then you're almost shocked to find out that, what? You know, they, but you know what Paul says? You all once walked in. We all, in fact, he says we in Ephesians 2, we were dead. We all lived this way. And so the fact is, it's nothing to be proud of. It's something that we're all ashamed of and we don't boast about it, or it shouldn't be our recollection of the good old days for sure. But we all should be able to recall there was a time when we were not living the way we should. And that's true for me. I assume it's true for you because Paul says we all once walked in this way. So everybody used to, if you're a Christian now, you used to be there. That was when you were dead. And now he says you've been raised from that. And so therefore, verse 8, continuing, you must put them all away. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you put off the old self with its practices. So here's kind of a second grouping of things. And notice that he says, you must put them away. These aren't things that you can kind of hold on to. And a lot of this group has to do with our mouth, which is interesting. And how many people would say that they pretty well have their life together except something about their mouth? James kind of predicts that, doesn't he? You know, people, you kind of control your whole body, but sometimes the last thing you kind of wrestle under control is your tongue. It's an unruly thing. But he says in James chapter 1, if any man, let's go and look and see. I was going to try to quote it. James 1:26. We're going to mainly stay in, this will be the one verse that's not in Colossians. James 1:26. If anyone thinks he is religious, does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this man's religion is worthless. Would it be okay, brethren, to take care of all that, but hang on to some of this? James says no. Now, interestingly, you can hear your own self, and think about these justifications, because I hear these things. Well, that's not that big a deal. I don't really even understand what's the big deal. I don't see why it really matters how we talk. It doesn't, what, little white lies, do they really, does it matter that much? Let me ask you this. Those thoughts, do you think they come from God? Thoughts that say this stuff right here isn't a big deal? Oh yeah, now that's the big stuff over there, but you know, like how we talk and what we say about people, how we talk about people, how we speak to people, whether we tell the truth, the kind of language we use, the things we talk about, that's not really all that big of a deal. Does that come from God? I would suggest to you it does not come from God. What comes from God says you must put them all away. That's what the Word says. None of that stuff belongs up there. It all has to be left down here. Paul says, you died to all that, therefore you better be putting it to death if it's in you so that you can be setting your mind and hearts on what is above. So let's examine ourselves. Let's do that PET scan. Let's do the thing where we, you know, through our life and we say, who, do I see something here that's earthly? Does any of that ring a bell? If I struggle with one of those things, Paul would say, you better put it to death. You better give it the radiation. You better make sure it's dead so that you can get rid of it. Because all that stuff is what's bringing wrath. And that's what belongs to this world and this domain of darkness. The contrast begins in verse 10. having put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. The new self, we put off that stuff, we put on the new self. The new self looks like God. Created in the image of its creator. The new self is godlike. So these are godly things up here. What kind of things are those? Verse 12. Put on then. Here's the godly stuff. As God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another. And if any has a complaint against one another, forgiving one another. As the Lord has forgiven you, you must also forgive. Above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. Notice how these form an interesting contrast to that section. So down here you have anger, wrath, malice, slander. This is like people, conflict, tension, strife, anger, resentment, hatred, that kind of stuff. What's the heavenly contrast to that? Compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, being long-suffering. And when we do sin against each other, when we have a complaint, forgiving. See how those are the antidote? Those are the opposites of this stuff? That's the when your heart's on heaven above. And you know, we saw one already, a must. You must put them all away. Talking about these things? Must. And the same word is here when it comes to forgiveness. Notice that in verse 13. The end of it. As the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. Jesus made that clear, didn't he? For if you do not forgive those who sin against you, neither will your Father forgive you. They're linked together. Your forgiveness from God and your forgiving others, you can't disconnect them. You can't say, I want to be forgiven by God, but I'm not willing to forgive. Our Lord said, it doesn't work that way. Paul says, you must forgive. So these are things that if we're going to have our life up there and our hearts and mindset up there, this is the stuff. This is the godly things that are created like our Father, that are trying to be like our Father. We replace that junk with these good things. And then what is the overall thing? He said, of course, love is the part that kind of like binds it all together. And what do you suppose the effect of this? We could just keep on going and going. We're going to stop with verse 15 for today. Notice the two things that are mentioned here. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. So let's just pause for a moment and imagine. What is the effect in my life? If I'm living day to day and my heart and mind is set on things above, how's that going to affect me? Well, I'm going to be putting away this junk. As it pops up, put it to death, get rid of that. I'm going to be thinking this way. So this is how I'm going to interact with my fellow man. And what is the effect in my life? Can you see how this would bring peace to your life? How many people are looking for some kind of peace? They're in turmoil. And what they would love more than anything is to be at peace. And yet we're told the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace. The fruit, the result, the benefit, the good thing that we get by the Spirit dwelling in us has love, joy, and peace in it. There is peace. The peace of Christ rules in our hearts. If we will live this way, there is great peace that comes with it. Because we're right with God. We're not in conflict with God. Our conscience isn't at war inside of us telling us, I'm doing stuff I shouldn't be doing. I got to quit. We're like at peace because we're right with God. We're at peace because we're right with others. We're not like in constant strife and arguing and yelling and anger. And that's not this life. We're the peace of Christ is in our hearts. And of course, can you see anything here to be thankful about if we appreciate this picture? And be thankful. If our hearts are there and our minds are there and we understand we've been rescued and we know where we're going and we have the joys of this life, then there's everything to be thankful for. So what a contrast this is between the old and the new. And so I will conclude with two questions for you to consider. He starts the chapter by saying, if you have been raised with Christ. So the first question is, have you been raised with Christ? How did that happen? We saw in chapter 2, you were buried with him and you were raised with him. He describes it as circumcision. It happens at baptism. That's that moment when we put to death the old man and we start living a new life in him. So we're raised with him. So here's the question. First question, have you been raised with Christ? If not, and I think everybody listening to me has. If not, you need to do that. If you haven't been raised with Christ, if you have been raised with Christ, because that's what he's writing to people who have. So the majority of people here would say, yes, I've been raised with Christ. So the second question is, if you've been raised with Christ, is your heart set on things above? Is your mind up here? Or do we have some work to do? So if you look at that and you say, yes, I've been raised with Christ, but somehow I slid back down and I'm kind of back on this earthly stuff again, then Paul's writing to you and he says to you, put those things to death and get your mind back where it needs to be. So perhaps there's some things that we need to take to heart here and take action on and make some changes in our lives. And we need this regular reminding. I think that's why he wrote these letters. They probably heard this before. But Peter says, I'm going to keep reminding you. I think Paul was, keep on reminding you. I'm going to keep reminding you. And we need to keep reminding each other because it's so easy to get back, slide back down and get back onto earthly stuff. We've got to keep our hearts and minds set on things above. That's why we come together. That's why we sing these songs. That's why we talk about these things, so that we can remind ourselves where we're going, where our home is. Perhaps there's someone here this morning who needs to respond to the invitation. If we can help you in any way, let us know as we stand and sing.